Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome in studio, Will Duffy. Will, great to have you on the show.
Hey, Bob. Thanks.
Will, you've been a producer for Bob Inyart Live for years. How long have you been working with us?
It would be 5 years in February.
5 years. And you're also the founder of the Collaborators Project, every once in a while doing some of the most extraordinary protests against abortionists and their collaborators.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun with that.
We really have. But you and I were talking about a conversation that came up on Facebook. So why don't we let the audience know what that conversation was? And before we get to that, then maybe we'll talk about the show from a couple days ago. But so what's happened on Facebook?
Well, you know, obviously being a Christian, I've got a lot of Christian friends on Facebook. And I really don't Facebook much, if that's a verb nowadays.
Mm, yeah.
But I do follow and I read, and so many times the conversation gets turned into essentially not judging.
Not judging. And so we want to talk about that because the state of that discussion in some circles has taken Christians so far from what you would view as traditional Christian influence in our culture to what seems to me to be a virtual hatred of your neighbor instead of love your neighbor, apathy and hatred of your neighbor. But put it in nice words, we love them. That's why we don't criticize them. So let's talk through that. But first, a couple days ago, we did a show, What is Money? And every show at Bob Inyart Live, it ends up on theologyonline.com, one of the world's larger theology forums. They've got 1.5 million posts on there, thousands of members, and every show gets its own thread, and there's a discussion, and there's maybe 50 or 80 comments or so, I'm not sure, on our program, What is Money?
Wow, that's a lot of comments.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So has some of that conversation spilled over into your life? What have people been talking about that show? Because that's a topic that really interests me.
Yeah, that was a great show. I appreciated it more than anything because it's not really something that BEL talks about too much.
Mm. Economics, we touch on once in a while, like the debate with Neil Bortz, national spokesman for the fair tax and national sales tax. That was a fun show. But you're right, we hardly ever talk about money and what is money. But did you get any feedback?
Yeah, you know, these are all very relevant issues, and I was having a conversation with some family and some friends on the show, and they had actually listened to the show as well, and it was just a real good time. One thing that they really laughed at was, you know, talking about gold salesmen, how their pitch is essentially your paper money is worthless, you need to buy gold, and then they take your paper money and give you their gold.
Oh, yeah, right. It's at least a way of stepping back and saying, let's look at this. Let's not be emotional. And so they want your Federal Reserve notes, which we have in our wallets, $20 bills, $10 bills, whatever currency, and the money we have in our bank accounts that's based on Federal Reserve notes. And they say that's worthless. You need gold. Well, they already have the gold. Why do they want to trade their gold, which is valuable, for your Federal Reserve notes, which are worthless? It's just funny. And of course, you know, they could use that then and buy more gold. But as long as the margin is good enough, they want your Federal Reserve notes, and they'll give you all the gold you want.
Yep.
Yeah, so that it's sort of funny. It's a way of stepping back and thinking about it. And we talked about the heavy sales pitch on a lot of conservative shows today to buy gold now. And gold is very high. So a lot of financial investors are recommending that people sell gold because it's so high. You want to buy low and sell high. That's if you're wise or lucky. That's what people do when they're wise or lucky. They buy low and sell high. And we have millions of people who, you know, at the time of the dot-com explosion on the internet, they're buying Yahoo or Google for $500 a share, and then you have the dot-com bust. And with gold at, I don't know what it's at now, 25, 30-year high or whatever it is, and so millions of people now are buying gold when it's at a peak.
And I guess hopefully for them it stays that way, but that's usually not the case.
Hopefully it'll stay there or go up for them. But it could go down, and I pointed out when people bought gold, you know, 25, 30 years ago, it wasn't a very good investment. They could live their whole lives and die and not have made any money with their gold. So it's a commodity like 1,000 other commodities, and the value of it will go up and down based on demand. So, what is money? It's generating a lot of comments because a lot of conservatives have been taught that our money should be based on gold.
Yeah, a lot of people that are politically active, really like to talk about having a gold standard, and that's what they want to go back to.
Right. And so we made arguments about why that is not necessary to have a godly or a justifiable monetary system. And some of the criticism, it seems that folks thought, well, I just stepped out into this area that we're not familiar with, and I have no idea what I'm talking about, which is possible, of course. But a lot of those folks don't know that years ago I wrote a novel. You remember that novel?
Oh, that's right. The First 5 Days.
First 5 Days, and we pulled it off the market some years ago. And it's a 300-page or longer novel, and people love it. I mean, the reviews we got were just rave. People love that novel.
Weren't you advocating a gold standard in the novel?
Yes, exactly. And the novel was based in part on a gold standard and criticism of fractional banking. And so for me to study this topic then over a period of years and read a number of Austrian economists and wrestle with what the Bible says about, you know, principles of right and wrong and personal property and so on and money, and eventually come to the decision that I was wrong and that our conservative circles that think money has to be based on gold, that it's wrong. So one of the things I'd ask for friends and conservatives who are upset, some are upset, is to at least listen to the argument and consider it and then respond. What has happened mostly is people have gotten upset and they've told us they disagree.
Yeah, they need to provide a reason, right? Or they need to deal with the arguments.
Yeah,
or
that would help. That would help, because saying I disagree, well, you're wrong because I disagree with you, that's not very helpful. If God said that to me, if God said, Bob, you're wrong because I disagree with you, that would be completely satisfying.
Yeah, that's fine.
I would be fulfilled in my confidence that, yes, I am wrong. But when a friend or whoever, if a Barack Obama's team of economists, if they disagreed or agreed with me, that doesn't say who's right or wrong. So weighing the argument based on the evidence and the claims, that's helpful.
Yeah, you got to hash these things out. You got to throw the arguments out on the table, debate a little bit, figure out what's going on.
Yeah, so people have said, well, what should money be? And money, for example, in America, if you were to have gold in your basement and issue, people would say, will you store this gold for me? I've got 3 ounces of gold. I've got 2 pounds of gold. Would you store it for me and give me a receipt? And that receipt would be transferable so that people around you could start using those receipts as money. Well, our government would confiscate that gold. They would shut you down. That's illegal in America.
They hate competition, right?
They do hate competition, and I think that should be legal. I don't think the government has the right to tell somebody you can't do that. Now, the folks, the conservative Christians on Theology Online who are criticizing what we've argued, I don't think they realize, but they have been advocating a monetary system that's run by the government, run and regulated by the government. And God didn't authorize the government to do that. So I think it's a mistake. And I think you would have every right to warehouse gold and give people receipts for that gold and have them have those receipts be transferable. Just like a business should have every right to issue stock in its business and allow that stock to be transferable if they want it to be. And just like banks, as in our history, banks, you could have the Bank of Kansas City and they issue money. And to the extent that the market has faith and credit in that bank, they will accept or reject the notes from that bank. And so I think it should be based on private enterprise and freedom. And I think that, and technology especially enables that to succeed in a way that in the past you needed gold or silver because we didn't have all these other alternatives.
Yeah, you made a good point. Maybe it'll be a good segue into what we're going to talk about next. But getting God's opinion on a matter is of the utmost importance. And it's something that is just overlooked time and time again.
Mm. Well, and so let's talk about that. But let me give one example on Theology Online in the Bob and Your Life forum. A lot of people don't know about that forum. Every show we do gets a show summary, and it gets posted also on Theology Online where people could comment about the show. Usually there's the best, the quote of the day is up there and so on. And one person said, his whole argument was, well, this what Bob is saying is invalid because it's not consistent with the Constitution. Now, overlooking that specific claim, his general position is something is valid if it's consistent with the Constitution, and it's invalid if it's not. Well, first of all, how about before the U.S. Constitution? Were there no principles anywhere in the world that can be used to determine if a monetary system was justifiable or not? Well, that's not reasonable.
Of course there were.
Of course there are principles of right and wrong from God that we can use to run a civil society. And secondly, what this person is doing, I think without realizing, is putting the Constitution in the place of God. He's saying the way we determine whether something is right or wrong, something like a monetary system, is what does the Constitution say about it? And I'm sorry, that's just, he's missing a big step.
That's a side deal at that point.
That's a side deal. What men have compromised in Philadelphia in a hot, muggy summer over weeks of struggling and came up with, that's an agreement between men about what they think they should do to get along together. But when God said it, that settles it. So the first question is, what is right or wrong in the eyes of God? And then you could look secondarily at the Constitution and say, how does that conform to what God says? But the test of whether some idea is valid or not is not, does it agree with the Constitution? No, it's, does it agree with God and God's word? So anyway, that does get us into your Facebook discussion that was going on.
Yeah, so again, you know, so many Facebook discussions and threads and talks turn into, you know, not judging. And that's, I think, probably the number one Christian doctrine today.
Not judge. Don't judge.
Don't judge. And it's not, you know, it's definitely not biblical. I want to do something. Mm. I'm going to do it. Mm. I think you're going to like it.
All right.
So you did something pretty extraordinary, and you went through the Bible and looked at every single miracle in the Bible.
Yes.
And that there was a reason for that, to look at, in history, how men have reacted to God performing miracles.
Yeah, what was the response of people who witnessed the miracles to the miracles? People think when folks see a miracle, everyone will believe. So I thought, well, it'd be good to quantify that. Is it true in the Bible, everybody who witnessed miracles, did they all believe?
And of course they didn't.
Yeah, the results were astounding. Overwhelmingly, people hardened their heart, and to the extent that you can say that miracles foster unbelief. And that came from actually looking at what the Bible says about miracles rather than assuming what we think it might say.
Well, what I want to do is similar, but I want to go through the Bible and record all the times where someone is judging somebody.
Mm.
And I predict that in every major story in the Bible, of which there are hundreds, someone's judging somebody.
Somebody's judging somebody. Wow, what a good point. Like when David slew Goliath, he's making a judgment that Goliath deserves to be slain.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Yeah.
And God bless David because of his courage in that situation.
Yeah, judging is really a part of life. It's a fact of life. It's something that we're to do. But kind of where this Facebook, this specific Facebook conversation started, mm-hmm. was talking about judging hypocritically, which is obviously a very important issue that we need to deal with as Christians. Jesus Christ made it clear he doesn't want us judging like a hypocrite.
Right. So you don't judge rightly.
Yeah, judge rightly. You don't want to be involved in sin and going out and telling somebody they shouldn't be involved in that sin, something that you're doing yourself, that you're not even trying to get rid of in your life.
Yeah, sure. And in fact, Jesus said to judge with righteous judgment and to judge rightly. And we have an article called Judge Rightly is Not Some Guy's Name. And it's on KGOV.com. And Will, there's a funny little cartoon embedded in that article. And it's a courtroom scene. And here's the judge with his gavel up on his bench. And the accused is sitting next to him. And the judge says, "And then I thought, who am I to judge? Go home, little man."
Now that's classic, but it's also 100% true.
Right. It gets to a valid point.
Yeah. What do we do? I mean, how do you have criminal justice without judging? How do you have judges without judging? What about police officers? That's what they do for a living, is they judge people.
Yeah, the church. And generally what happens is people really dig into don't judge when they have Christians around them who are trying, for example, to stop the slaughter of innocent children. That really motivates people to become intensely focused on this idea of this absolutist idea of don't ever judge. Don't ever judge.
Yeah, it does.
And it seems like it's motivated. It's a defense mechanism. All these Christians who are trying to stop babies from being dismembered, from having their arms and legs ripped off of them, all those people, they're sinning because they're busybodies in other people's life, and why should I care?
Yeah, we've completely lost the true meaning of loving your neighbor.
Mm.
If you know when your neighbor's going to have his head ripped off and you don't do anything about it, that's not really loving your neighbor.
No, right. And, you know, these churches and the individuals who say they don't judge, they only forgive, do they call the police if they've been wronged? Do they? Would they?
Of course.
Of course they would. What if we were to go to them and say, well, we're going to have one of our friends go to your church, and when the collection plate comes around, steal the money. And we just want to test to see if you guys judge or if you don't judge. And if you don't judge, then we expect that you're not going to criticize him, and you're going to forgive him immediately.
I bet you that one is the unforgivable sin right there.
That's the unforgivable sin, taking money from a church that teaches don't judge. That is funny, right?
Yeah, there's kind of a real simple test, you know, when looking at somebody as if they're, you know, truly believe this don't judge mentality, and that is, you know, turn this wrong that we're not supposed to judge other people, turn that wrong against that person.
Hmm.
You know, if someone is being wronged, someone's being stolen from, or someone's being assaulted, or someone's trying to murder that person, they're going to judge, and they're going to want other people to judge in order to help protect them.
Right.
It's real easy when you're not affected.
So if somebody's trying to hurt your child, say some bully's beating up your child, you're going to say, well, I don't judge him, and I love him, and I forgive him, and I don't want him to be punished. What is it to me if he beats up my child?
Yeah, of course not.
Of course they wouldn't say that. So when it's a neighbor who's going to have an abortion to kill their child, it's killing somebody else's child, not your child. So what do you care? What do I care if somebody else's child is going to be killed? But Jesus said to love your neighbor as yourself. But apathy and self-centeredness, it focuses everything, all of spirituality becomes, well, how does this make me feel? How does this apply to me? And eventually, Christians convince themselves that God doesn't care if people slaughter their children, cheat on one another, commit adultery, murder, steal, kidnap. child pornography. Why should we be concerned if children are abducted and assaulted and videotapes sold of the assault? Why should we care?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we know God cares. God instituted government, and God also had a law. It was God's law. It was many laws, and the purpose of those laws was because God cared about all these different things, and he wanted to deter that.
And in fact, God is grieved when we sin, and when we sin, it's bad that sin hurts us, but is that the end of it? Is that the only reason sin is bad, because it hurts us?
Of course not. It hurts others. It hurts God.
Oh, it hurts others. And that gets God especially angry, it seems, in the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
Overwhelmingly, Jesus said it's better to have a millstone tied around your neck and be thrown into the sea than to cause a little one in me to stumble. And so somebody who thinks that God doesn't really care about sin, they'd have to say, well, Jesus doesn't really care if you cause a little one to stumble. He wouldn't care if you tempt other, if you tempt young married people to violate their vows to one another. God doesn't really care. He just wants you to be able to feel good about it. That's where we are.
Oh yeah, and it's just unbelievable. But you know, in a situation where, you know, a man is trying to violently rape a woman, you know, it matters more. You know, for that, what the harm is going to be done to that woman, than the harm that's going to come to that man for committing such an act.
We have a flyer on this. Judge Rightly is not some guy's name. Is also a Bob in Your Life pamphlet, and one friend of ours, Rich Holst in Indianapolis, brought these to his church, and he was sharing them with people. And the pastor got real mad and said, We don't judge at this church. And Rich pointed out in the Bible where if people are fornicating, they're living together and they're not married, that they should be excommunicated. And the pastor said, we would never kick anyone out of this church. 2 weeks later, the same pastor kicked Rich out of the church.
Wow.
Because Rich was sharing to people these tracts that have these Bible verses in them. So they won't kick people out of the church for drunkenness or adultery or
sleeping together,
fornication,
homosexuality,
right, or killing your child, but for sharing what the Bible says about sin, there's the unforgivable sin again.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, Will, that when Christians don't buy into the love your neighbor by trying to get them to stop killing one another, when they don't buy into that, then their defense mechanism, they're motivated out of guilt, and they become obsessed with not judging. It becomes an obsession. So when you have, like, say, the Reverend Flip Benham in Operation Save America, and they have saved hundreds of children from being burned to death by saline solution years ago, or having literally their arms and legs ripped off of them while they're still alive and then eventually killed, here's my prediction, because I only know the Christians around me. My prediction is the Christians around Flip Benham or around other Christians like that, like, say, Keith Mason, Personhood USA, the peripheral Christians will be obsessed with don't judge because they feel guilty. Just like when blacks were slaves, there were the Christians like William Wilberforce that fought for the dignity of a black man, and there were the majority of Christians who were apathetic and couldn't care less.
Oh, yeah. Very, very few cared enough to do something. You know, if you're not a Jew, it's really easy to just not worry about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a black, it's really easy to say slavery's not a big deal.
Yeah, and if you're not in the womb, big deal if they're going to rip somebody's arms and legs off, as long as it's not my arms and legs or my baby's arms and legs.
Yeah, it's really sad. And then you look at a situation, you know, there's so many other situations. Just recently here in Colorado, a woman's unborn child was killed by a guy that ran a stop sign.
Right, and there's no justice. We cannot charge that person with homicide. And this is happening repeatedly.
Well, forget that. We got to take a step back, and we need people to judge that person.
Why? That what he did was wrong.
Yeah, we got to step back even further and get people to at least acknowledge, yes, we should judge him that he did something wrong, and then the next step is punishing him.
So all the judge not Christians who think that's an absolute, they don't look to see that Jesus said, you hypocrites, first stop committing the same sin, then you can see clearly enough to judge. That's what Jesus said. Well, they stop after two words. That is the epitome of taking the Lord out of context.
Yeah, you can't rely on your understanding of the Bible from Hillary Clinton.
You can't, because that's Hillary's favorite verse.
Oh, of course.
That was your point?
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. And so I think those Christians, I bet you they do advocate a criminal justice system where people are punished for doing wrongly and judged, but it's like they want other people to do the dirty work.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it. It's like somebody who thinks it's a sin to have a phone or to use a car, like, say, an Amish person, and then they ask to use your car and your phone. Like, there's something wrong with that.
Yeah, essentially, they're advocating you need a license to judge.
You need a license.
That's what they're advocating. You can judge, but only if you sit in these positions that are allowed to judge.
Right.
And that's just not the reality. I mean, my wife knows if someone comes into our house and is trying to harm her or our kids, she is to judge them. It doesn't matter if they're in the body or not.
Right.
She
if
judges
Christian
them.
Or not, doesn't matter. You're trying to hurt my family. I'm identifying it, and I'm going to respond to it.
And then it gets beyond that. We need to love our neighbor's kids, too. And if someone is trying to hurt our neighbor's kids...
like selling them drugs. Somebody selling kids drugs on a park in a playground. What do you say? That's not my responsibility to stop them from sinning. If these 14-year-old kids want to buy drugs and get high, what is that to me? If they want to drive drunk, what is that to me? If somebody wants to beat their children to death, what is that to me? If somebody wants to make child pornography or rape children... or enslave or traffic in children sexually? Why is that my concern? And that is, that shows us how wicked this judge not mentality is. And I think we have a good understanding of what motivates it.
Yeah, the very least we need to do is to say something. And very often we need to step in and do something. Mm.
It's a Christianity that maximizes comfort. My own comfort becomes my God, a very comfortable Christianity, non-confrontational. And, Will, you know, the prophets and the apostles, they never confronted anybody.
Oh.
Jesus never confronted people on sin.
No, John the Baptist.
Never.
No.
I mean, the whole Bible. The whole Bible is a confrontation of man's sin, and Christians are more spiritual than God, than Jesus, than the prophets, and they've been taught it doesn't matter.
The Bible is just full of people's sin.
Yeah.
That's what it focuses on.
Right.
People's sin, not the good things they did.
The confrontation of it.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, Will Duffy, thanks so much
Thank
for joining
you.
Us. Online, kgov.com, click on Writings and judge rightly. May God bless you.